And away we go on this Thursday, October the 24th, 2019. 14 minutes past the hour, and we have got a great show this morning. If you are interested in the history of Marion, on two counts this morning, joining us in the second hour this morning, we'll be joined by the longest-serving mayor in Marion history, Jack Kellogg, will be in for the hour 9:15 to 10 o'clock this morning. But we are going to kick off the morning this morning with a great new book that has been written. By the way, the book drop party will be tonight. Our presentation will be tonight at Tri Rivers Career Center, 7 p.m. There's no charge to get in to that event. The book is about Crystal Lake Amusement Park, which so many people have fond memories of, and the author is Randy Winland. Randy, thank you so much for coming in this morning. A big day.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Randy, how did this all come about?
I like local history and have been involved in local history for quite a few years. And some years back, I was teaching a class through Ashland University about how to incorporate local history into the curriculum. The idea that, in my mind, the best history is not always taught in history class. It's history taught as part of math or part of science or part of phys ed class. And we were talking about recreation and entertainment, and a person said, you know that a guy named Joe Grounds has done a huge amount of research on a former amusement park in Marion. And I had never heard of Crystal Lake. I'm not from Marion originally. So to make a long story short, I found the information that Joe had put together. He had taken the Marion Star and had written hundreds of pages of transcripts of articles about Crystal Lake. And then a friend of mine, a gentleman named Mike Perry, has a fantastic collection of Marion ephemera, Marion photos, and he had a lot of photos of Crystal Lake in 1925, which was when it first opened as a full amusement park. So for two or three years, I've had the idea in the back of my mind of taking the information that Joe Grounds has started, combining that with the photos that Mike Perry had, and putting it together in a publication. So about a year and a half ago, I started on that process, and it just evolved and grew, and I found more and more information and more photos, and eventually I was able to compile them into the book that we'll be releasing tonight at Tri-Rivers.
Now, if somebody wants to buy a copy of the book tonight, what is the cost?
The cost will be $27. That includes the tax. The sticker price, if you will, is $25.99. At the time you add the tax on, it'll be $27. We will have those available tonight at the book release at Tri-Rivers. And then starting tomorrow, they will be available at Heritage Hall, the Marion County Historical Society. They also will be available at Books on Center and at Carol's Jewelers and at Andrew's Pastries. And they'll also be available online from our website at marionhistory.com.
And I want to let people know, this is not a pamphlet type of a book. This is a great book, over 100 pages, packed with information from every era of this area of town, and great pictures in here as well. When you do a book like this and you don't know much about it, you talked about some of the people you relied on. What were you looking for as you searched this out?
I'm going to back up just for a second before I answer that. I was reticent in not mentioning 100% of the proceeds from this do go to the Marion County Historical
Great.
Society. This is not a fundraiser for Randy Winland. It's a fundraiser for the Marion County Historical Society. So when somebody purchases a book, that's where the proceeds will go. I was trying to put together in a format that would be, first of all, authoritative, it would be accurate, but then secondly, it would be enjoyable. So somebody would sit down and could enjoy reading it, could learn about things they didn't know perhaps. And one of the nice things about self-publishing the book, which I did as opposed to going through a publishing company, is if I found a rabbit hole I wanted to go down, I could go down the rabbit hole. So as an example, there was a reunion of the Spanish-American War veterans held at Crystal Lake. So I put a page or two in about Marion's role in the Spanish-American War. There were different people that had been there, different celebrities that had been there, and so I put information in about those. But the idea was that I wanted to compile it as a reference source. I wanted to compile it as something that people would enjoy reading and something that would preserve memories of what was a very, very important part of Marion and Marion County.
Why do you think this has maintained itself for nearly 100 years now, and the park's been gone for a long time, but it is still talked about to this day?
I think there are still people around whose parents or grandparents may have gone there. Not likely there's very many people around who would have gone there when it was actually a music park, but for many, many years it was a dance pavilion and then a roller skating rink. And I've talked to several people that remember skating there when they were young and having stories about it. And also, I think people have a little bit of a hard time imagining that there was actually an amusement park with roller coaster and carousels and bump'em cars and dodge'em cars and Custer cars and a love tunnel ride here in Marion, Ohio. I think they find that somewhat difficult to believe, and it was true. It was quite the place for about 4 or 5 years as a full-fledged amusement park, but then it survived in various capacities up until the late 1950s.
Certainly the book goes into this much more in depth, but for the purposes here this morning, give us a thumbnail sketch of the development, what it was, what it became, just the period of it being there.
Okay. Well, in the early 1900s, a quarry was started, and part of what I talk about in the prologue of the book is the history of quarrying in Marion County, because that's such an important part of our background. The first major industry in Marion County was quarrying. Long before Huber or Marion Steam Shovel or any of that, we were a quarrying community. And the Crystal Lake pond, if you will, it's much bigger than a pond, but the Crystal Lake was actually a quarry. And so I do some background on quarrying. In 1922, the quarry was leased by the YMCA for use as an outdoor swimming pool. They built a bathhouse and so forth. Well, then within just a few months, the land was purchased by the Crystal Lake Park Company, who took it over from the YMCA. And then they developed it over the next 2 to 3 years as a swimming area. And then in 1925, they announced they were going to build an amusement park. They spent over $175,000 at that time, which may not sound like much today, but if you put that into 2019 dollars, it was $2.5 million. So they invested $2.5 million in developing this amusement park. Again, they built a roller coaster, built a huge dance pavilion, they put in a big bathhouse and so forth. And over the next 4 years, it continued to develop. Dancing was very, very popular there. There were a lot of kids' activities. There was a fun house, skee ball, all different kind of activities. But then in 1929, an event called the Great Depression came about. And the Great Depression did not close Crystal Lake, but it certainly made an impact on it, because going into the 1930s and through the 1930s, discretionary income was virtually nil. People did not have money to go to music parks. So what they would do, though, is they would go to dances, because there were different ways of paying for dances. Crystal Lake used two varieties. They used a variety called the social plan, where you would pay a fee to go into the dance pavilion, and then you could dance all you want, or you could sit and listen to music, but you paid a fee at the door, so to speak. The other plan they used was called the park plan, where you could go in the door at no charge, but then you paid every time you went on the dance floor. And so that would enable people to go out and maybe only pay for one dance, pay their nickel or their dime or whatever it might have been, to dance a dance, but then they could sit there for a couple of hours and listen to the music. And so Crystal Lake was able to survive as a dance hall and swimming area. The swimming pool was very, very popular, the swimming lake, I should call it, although it did have some sections blocked off more as traditional pools, like a kiddie pool area and a shallow pool area and then a diving area, as well as the big lake itself. So through the 1930s and 1940s, it was a dance pavilion, then eventually became a roller skating pavilion, roller skating rink. The swimming area stayed open. There were a lot of events held there. Circuses were on the grounds. One summer, there were 5 different circuses came to Marion in one summer, and 3 of them were on the Crystal Lake Park grounds. They used the grounds as a circus area. So then up through in the early 1950s, there was a time where they tried to reinvigorate it, put some rides back in. Most of the rides had been taken down in the early 1930s, they were taken down. But then in the 1950s, they put a few rides back in. They only lasted for a year or so. They eventually, in 1958, the Bargain City franchise took over the one building that was still standing, and the lake closed down at that point as far as legitimate swimming. I'm sure there was still some swimming in it, but it was not opened as a lake. It was not available for that. And then eventually Bargain City built a new building, and in 1975, the old dance pavilion, old roller skating rink, burned, and that was really the end of the Crystal Lake.
Where did the name Crystal Lake come from?
We don't know for sure. Probably simply from the very clear waters. They advertised the water was so clear you could see 15 feet down. and the sun would help warm the water, and so it was not as cold to swim. But there also was an amusement area or a lake up in Michigan that was very, very popular, named Crystal Lake, that I found advertisements that you could take a train up to Crystal Lake, Michigan, on the Buckeye Express train. And so, and apparently a fair amount of Marianites did that, because it continued to be advertised in the local media that you could take this train to Crystal Lake, Michigan. So we don't know for sure where it came from. Two different theories. My guess would be that it came simply from being a very crystal clear water lake, so therefore Crystal Lake.
From looking at the book, it seems like a big part of this area, this park, right up through the end, was dancing. There seems like there were dance marathons, dancing get-togethers. How much of that went on there? How big a part of dancing was there a part of Crystal Lake?
Well, it was huge. Again, as I mentioned, the rides part of the lake, of the park, were only open for about 4 to 5 years. So from that point on, it was dancing and swimming. And you mentioned about the dance marathons. That was one of the things I really enjoyed researching and writing about, was how the marathons were conducted and what went on and what some of the record lengths were that dance marathons across the country were held. I have several photos in the book of participants in one of the Marian dance marathons. One of the things that was nice about this is being able to incorporate some of the resources that we had in Marian through the Historical Society, through Mike Perry, through other collectors, Bob Turner, Richard Carey, other people that collect Marian ephemera and Marian memorabilia. I was able to incorporate that into the book, and they were very willing to share that material. They wanted to help preserve the history of the park also.
It's very interesting. On the back cover of the book, there's an advertisement. Attend the grand opening Saturday, May 15th, 1926, Central Ohio's finest up-to-date amusement park. From 1926, May 15th, 1926, through the Great Depression, if I would have walked into Crystal Lake amusement park, what would I have seen?
Oh my gosh, you would have seen a carousel. You would have seen a 2,500-foot-long roller coaster. That's almost a half mile. So think about the length of that. And it was not a fancy roller coaster as what we would think of today. It was what I call a hoop-de-doo coaster. It went up and down and up and down and up and down, made a sharp turn, and came back and up and down and up and down. But it was the zip roller coaster. You would have seen Custer cars. Custer cars were little self-powered cars that you drove around a track. The early ones had electric motors, and eventually other later versions had the gasoline motors. You would have seen a Walking Charlie. A Walking Charlie was a game. Many of us have been to festivals or fairs where you throw a baseball at a stuffed cat and try and knock it over to win a prize. Well, Walking Charlies were life-size mannequins that walked on a track, if you will, in front of you, and you tried to knock off its hat or knock a cup out of its hand to win a prize. You'd have seen pony rides. You'd have seen the swimming area and bathing beauties in their one-piece bathing suits. And some of these were scandalous because they had no backs in them, and now, oh my gosh, that was awful. You would have had the refreshment areas. You would have had the old mill, which was a enclosed water ride. It was a long ride that had little boats that floated through it. It was all in the dark, and supposedly there were scenes of a comical nature, is how it was advertised throughout it. Sort of like It's a Small World at Disney, a very, very early version of that. My guess is it may have been a few people going through it that never saw any of the scenes because it was a chance to be alone in the dark in a little boat with your sweetheart. But we won't go there. There was a shooting gallery. There was an airplane swing ride that had a 70-foot tower and six airplanes suspended from it that would spin around, and by centrifugal force would go out and out and out and out. And at night they were lit up, and from what I've read, it was beautiful to see these planes flying around with the lights on at night. There was the whip, which was a ride that people would sit in. It would go and spin around and make a sudden spin, and that would throw you up against your partner. And so you would have seen a lot. You would have seen a picnic grove. You would have seen concessions. It was basically a small version of what you would see at Cedar Point or Kings Island. Now, I'm not comparing them as far as scope or size, but it was a smaller version of that.
Now, obviously, this predates Cedar Point, and to this day, I know there are people who were not alive during this time who know the name of this roller coaster. They know about the Zip. How big of an attraction could you ascertain that was?
Well, it was huge, and you know, it was one of the largest ones in Ohio. There was a book I used as part of my research called Forgotten Amusement Parks of Ohio, and it had a tremendous amount of material in it about roller coasters. The Zip was one of the longest coasters. It became kind of infamous because the very first week it was open, a young man and his cousin were riding it, and apparently they loosened their seat belts. You know, at the top of the first hill, there was a guard, if you will, that was stationed there that made trying to make sure your belts were tight. But apparently they loosened their belts, and the young man was thrown from the car and hit his head on a rail and killed. So it was a tragedy. But right off the bat, it gained infamy from this tragedy. The very next night, there were people sitting in their cars outside the Zip area. There was no fence right around it, and maybe looking to see if something else would happen. I'm morbid, perhaps, but maybe that's why they were there. But anyhow, one of the cars hit one of the guy wires for the Zip, and the guy wire broke and whipped around and cut people. Not really severely, but still, it was a situation that it became kind of almost infamous. But then it was something that many of them had never had the opportunity to do. People did not travel in the 1920s like we think of going today. Today it's nothing to hop in a car and drive to Cincinnati or drive to Sandusky or even further. But back in those days, people didn't travel that far. They may have traveled on the interurban, Columbus, Delaware, and Marion, or Columbus, Bucyrus, and Marion interurbans, and they may have driven their car a distance, but there were over 50 amusement parks just in Ohio alone in the 1920s, and so they had to be located in areas that were easily accessible to people. So many people may never have seen a roller coaster prior to coming to Crystal Lake.
For people who don't know, just basically, in Marion, where would you have found Crystal Lake?
If you were to go out on the north end of Marion on what is today Route 4 and Route 423, where those two roads split, and Route 4 goes off to the right if you're going north, there's a big block building there that still stands. That used to be the Bargain City. That would have been the southern end of the park, and then just the north of that, there's a large area that's now a farm. It's all fenced in, and that's where the quarry was at, or where the lake was at. So it's on the east side of Route 4, where Route 4 and 423 split.
You talked about the young boy who was killed on the roller coaster early on. I had heard accounts of more than one death on the roller coaster over the year, too. Were there others, or just
not
one?
Not to my knowledge. I've never found anything about it other than one. There were some other injuries. There were several suicides, and then there also were some accidental drownings that took place in the lake. But that was the only one as far as a death on the roller coaster. Although it was an interesting story, it wasn't a death, but it was a story about a man who was riding the roller coaster and apparently was so surprised or so shocked that he opened his eyes up very wide and his last eye popped out. And his last eye actually flew out, and he came back into the station and was holding his head frantically trying to find his last eye. And the ride operator found it in the bottom of the car, and the story goes he cleaned it off, popped it back in, and off he went. So it kind of reminded me of the Christmas Story movie about you'll shoot your eye out.
Right.
Well, the heading I use this one, you'll pop your eye out. The Zip was so happy or so much of a thrill, it'll pop your eye out.
It's interesting. There were suicides at the park.
Several.
Several. What were people doing?
Killing themselves.
Well, I understand. Why at the park, I guess?
I don't really have an answer to that. They were by drowning. That was the only way I ever found that a suicide was committed at the park. There were some that were, people were depressed for whatever the reason might be. I really can't answer that, I guess, as far as why they chose there. There were other quarries in the area that had water in them, and there may have been suicides at those. I really don't know, but there were several. I'd have to go back and look, and there were some I didn't even write about, but I know there were at least four or five that I have, included in the book or bits and pieces about in the book, and I'm imagining there were others as well.
Were there any, because we know Cedar Point and Kings Island are big business, were there any financial records kept from the park about what kind of money they were making or what was being spent?
If there are, I've never been able to find them. The company that eventually, the Crystal Lake Park Company, went defunct. I could not find any records from them. They may exist somewhere in a basement or something. I really have no idea about that. I do know that they talked about one of the problems is that there wanted to be a ban on dancing on Sundays. That was a big deal to be able to have a dance on a Sunday. And the local Marion religious establishment, many of the churches and the ministers were highly opposed to that. And the authorities at Crystal Lake, or the owners of Crystal Lake, said that if they did not have dancing on Sundays, they probably would not be able to continue to operate it, because people would come to the park and some would come to ride the rides or to swim, but the real money they were making was from the people coming for the dancing and the concessions along with that. And I may just have been a ploy to keep Sunday dancing. I don't know if one day would really have impacted it or not. But they did talk about that that was a concern, that if they did not have Sunday dancing, that they could not financially maintain the park. They also talked about they did have to close it down. They were going to, they had already installed a large septic system, and they were going to sell it off as lots for houses and have a small housing development put in.
Mm, that's very interesting. You talked about celebrities who came to Crystal Lake. Who are some of the ones that people might remember?
Well, Glenn Miller and his orchestra was one that people would certainly remember, or at least have heard of. Marilyn Musecki, who was Miss America from Marion, was there for a while. There were different boxers there. I don't know if there were so many well-known celebrities as what there probably were just local people that were there. A lot of the dance bands, as I mentioned to you off air, I research this material and I write about it, and then it kind of just passes on. So for me to sit here now and name the bands that were there over the years, I really can't do that. But I do know that it was on a traveling rotation. There was a system of bands that would travel from park to park to park, or from pavilion to pavilion. And Crystal Lake was part of that rotation, and so there were nationally known bands and orchestras that came in and played there for the dances.
I saw their picture in the book as I was going through it last night, and so many people remember them locally here, the Chuck Wagon Pals. How big were they for people who don't remember them?
I don't know that. I had heard of them, but I really don't know much about them other than I was able to finally find out who the men were in the picture. I had the picture of the band for many years, but was able eventually to get some research and find out who they were, and that is included in the book, but I really don't have much background on them.
There's an interesting part of Marion history that we've talked about on this show that's tied to Crystal Lake and is in the book, and that involves the Red Apple Restaurant and elephants. What do you remember about that story?
Very little, other than that there was a circus traveling through North America, through North Marion, and a truck that was carrying three elephants, I believe, I think two adults and a baby, ran into a restaurant that was located up on North Main Street called the Red Apple, and there were photos of that happening, and the elephants were not severely injured. One of them had his trunk skinned, if I remember right, but the big issue was trying to keep them cool because it was very, very hot, and so there were stories about how they had to get canvas tarpaulins and put those over the elephants to keep those wet so the elephants would not become overheated and so forth. But another story about elephants is one of the circuses came to Marion and was up on the Drake lot, which was up on Fairground Street or in that area, a large circus lot, and one of the elephants escaped and kind of went on a rampage through North Marion, walking through people's backyards, walking over their sheds, knocking down fences. It apparently was not being nasty about doing this. It just wanted to go for a walk, and it didn't really much care what was in its road. Fence wasn't going to matter much this elephant. So eventually they were able to recapture it and put it back together. But one of the stories that I found interesting was when Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus came to Marion, and it talked about how efficient they were, how the train pulled in with 100 cars on the train, how it disembarked, they took all the wagons and all the animals and all the elephants, up, marched them up to Crystal Lake, set up, I think it was 40-some different tents, including the big top, within a matter of a few hours. But then when the last show of the night was done, people came out from the show and expected to see all the animal wagons and all the tents still there. They were already going to pack back up because the next day the show had to be in Columbus. I've gone to a few concerts that had elaborate lighting and sound systems that were installed just a few hours before the concert. And that same group I know had to be in Pittsburgh the next day or Charleston the next day. And so that concept of being able to pack and move and pack and move and pack and move goes way back, obviously, in the 1940s, 1950s, if not before.
Mm. It's fascinating because there are so many people, and we talked a little bit about this off the air, that have memories, but sometimes the memories don't go with exactly what happened. As a historian and writing a book like that, how hard is it to decipher that?
It's difficult, and especially when people are so adamant about what they believe. And when I had information or evidence, if you will, to say, well, that's not really what went on, but how do you tell someone nicely that what you're thinking is not really accurate? One example, I had a gentleman that swore that the Zip roller coaster frame was still standing in the 1970s. Well, we obviously knew it wasn't, because the Bargain City building was built about where the Zip roller coaster was. I had all kind of photos that show the land being empty, but he was just so adamant. And so a lot of what I did, if I could find it in print, even though I know, like any media, print is not infallible, but if I could find photos of it, certainly that is fairly infallible. If it shows an area that there's nothing there, well, it's pretty obvious that ride was taken down because there's nothing there in the photo. But it was more of an effort to be able to try to document. I would rather not write something than write something that is not accurate. That's something I strive very hard to do, is to be as accurate as possible. Are there mistakes in the book? Perhaps. I hope not. I've not found any yet, but I'm relatively sure somebody will come up to me and point out something that there was a little bit of a discrepancy. But we do the best we can with what resources we have to use. This book, if it had not been for the Marion Star, I could not have written it, because there is nothing else recorded about it. This is the first book that's been done on it. We did have photos, as I mentioned, but the photo only tells so much of a story. It just shows you what was there. It doesn't really tell you much about it. And so the idea that the Marion Star did report on Crystal Lake extensively, and a lot of advertisements were in the newspaper, it really was a source I was able to utilize to write the book.
When we look back to the height of the amusement park being in the 20s and the 1930s, are there people left who remember it well?
I would think not, because if they would have had to have been in their late childhood, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old, to really have much of a memory of it. And if they were 8 years old in 1920, well, then that means they're 108 now or thereabouts. And so, yeah, there might be a few people. I think more people remember it through stories that they have been told, that their grandparents went there, or perhaps their parents went there, certainly in roller skate. There are people that swam there that are still alive. There are people that roller skated there that are still alive that I've talked to. But as far as its heyday as a music park in the late 1920s, I can't fathom there's anybody alive that would remember that. I know a gentleman that will turn 100 years old in December that is sharp as a tack, and remembers going there in the 1940s and 50s and dancing, but he has no memory of it, you know, as a amusement park.
When we talk about the grand opening in the mid-1920s, and then we go through the 1970s when the final fire happened, which ended it all, the last bit of the vestige of what Crystal Lake had been, how had it, the majority of the time, what was it? What was the area? Was it more of just a roller skating rink, a dance pavilion? Was that what it was the majority of its time?
If as far as the building, yes. But then also there was a swimming area, and the swimming area was very, very popular. That's something that a lot of people, I think, kind of forget about, that was the largest outdoor swimming area in Marion. It was a very popular swimming area. For a couple of years, there was an ice skating rink there. I never heard about that. There was the North Pole ice skating rink. And it was an outdoor rink, obviously, that they had developed to be able to do ice skating. But from the early 1930s, when the rides were disassembled, up and through the late 1940s, it was primarily a dance pavilion and the outdoor swimming area. Then roller skating came about and became very popular in the late 1940s, and that continued up through the 1950s. It was still used as a dance pavilion somewhat, but for the majority of the years that it was open, if you look at the park as a whole, it was a dance pavilion / roller skating rink and the outdoor swimming area.
When the 1970s came about, the fire happened in 76? 75. From 1970 to 1975, what was the tenor of what was going on there?
Not much. In fact, virtually nothing. The Bargain City building that we know that still stands there was built in 68, I believe. I'd have to go back and look, but I believe it was 68. And the old building, my understanding was, the old rink, dance pavilion, was used as storage for a while, and then eventually I think it just went into disrepair. So from 70 to 75, as you mentioned, there would have been virtually nothing there. The land, the actual majority of the land, the property had been split into two parts. There was about a 12-acre parcel that was owned by Bargain City and the companies that owned it, and there was a sequence of companies that owned that. And then the additional 38 acres or whatever was kind of in limbo. When the Crystal Lake Park Company went defunct, there was nothing to pass that land on. And so it kind of sat there for several years. And eventually, a court order created a holding company. And in 1970, the holding company was able to sell off the land. And it was bought by, it wasn't bought by anybody right then, but they were able to hold it, to put it into it like a trust. And then eventually in 1991, the current owner bought the 40 acres, the 39 acres from the holding company, and built a home there and has a farm there and so forth. In 75, the old Bargain City building was burned down. Then in 1979, a new Bargain City was built out on State Route 95, behind where the Bonanza Family Restaurant was out there. And today that's Big Lots or Odd Lots or whatever it's called today. And so then the building that was the Bargain City sat empty. It was used for storage. It was used for a variety of companies. And now it's owned by a coin dealer out of Westerville, and it's used for light manufacturing. He manufactures plastic coin holders, extruded coin holders in there. So the building is still being used, but for light manufacturing.
Do we know about the time that the skating rink and dance pavilion was operational? Would it have been the late 60s?
Well, when did it stop being operational?
Yeah.
1958. 58, right. That's when Bargain City first moved in. Bargain City, or the predecessors to Bargain City, for 3 or 4 years prior to that, there were discount tents, if you will, set up on the south end of the property. And they would have these up during the summer. And then for a year or two, they would move into the Bargain City building, what became the Bargain City building, the old skating rink. They would move in there, and they'd be set up for a few months during the winter. Then when warm weather came, they would move to the outdoor tent, and then people would go back and start roller skating again. And then that happened for 2 or 3 years. So there was kind of a gradual conversion from roller skating to retailing in the late 1950s. 1958 is when the rink's Bargain City officially opened and was in there for good. So 57, 58 was the last year that it was available for roller skating.
Was there some other kind of attraction or something going on in Marion in the 50s that would have taken people away from that area at that point that had been used for so long?
Perhaps. I don't know what that was. I can't speak to that. I don't know the answer to that.
It's an interesting area because it lives so prevalent in people's minds. If you had to describe, after researching it, what the legacy of this place is, what would it be?
It was a reflection of the times. You know, in the 1920s, when it first opened, those were happy times. And, you know, the Roaring Twenties, everything was good. And Crystal Lake Park, the amusement park, was a relatively late comer as far as amusement parks. There were many other ones that were already in place before that. But it was a reflection of the times. 1920s, great times, and a great park. 1930s, bad times. Park reflected that. 1940s, war effort. We talk about people having scrap iron drives, scrap metal drives, and people going in the lake to pull materials out of the lake, and school kids taking scrap on the school buses and so forth. So the 1940s was early 1940s was a time of working together. Late 1940s, early 1950s, happy times again. They tried to have an amusement park again. They brought in some rides for a year or two. And then late 1950s, the conversion to big box stores, if you will. You know, I don't know the history of the big box stores across the nation, but it seems to me from just general background that, you know, a lot of the bigger companies, the Walmarts and stores of that nature, started developing more in the 1950s and early 1960s, and that's what happened to Crystal Lake.
What surprised you most in your research?
Oh, some of the little correlating stories, I guess, probably surprised me the most. There was one that I just got a big kick out of. There were two young boys, one was 16 and one was 17, that developed and built their own diving helmets so they could explore Crystal Lake. They took a hot water tank and cut it in half, and took a piece of an automobile windshield and cut a little piece out of glass and put it in the side of the hot water tank for a window. They took and hooked up a rubber hose to a couple of bicycle pumps, air pumps, and an old telephone operator's headset and ran the wire for that through the air hose and put some lead weights on it and put some lead weights on a pair of boots, and they went diving. And you had a couple kids on the bank just pumping and pumping and pumping to keep air in there. And the idea that two young men, 15 and 16 years old, would have the ingenuity and the courage, and maybe the stupidity, depending on your point of view, to build a diving helmet to explore the depths of Crystal Lake. That really amazed me. That in the whole scope of things, that was a very small part of it, but that amazed me, and it just kind of reflected on the ingenuity of people in general, what you can do if you want to. Probably overall, I didn't realize the scope of it, especially back in the late 20s when it was at full blow. And I had seen pictures, but they were pictures of a ride or a place or a building. Well, one of the things that frustrated me to no end, I can never find a layout map of the park. I had heard that there was one. I searched diligently, could never find it. So I have a friend who is a cartographer, a map maker, and I worked with him and gave him descriptions of where rides and buildings were at according to the newspaper and according to my sources, and then worked with that with the photos. And so he was able to develop a concept map of the layout of Crystal Lake. That was really pretty special because, to my knowledge, that is the only map of what was where. And again, it's a concept map. It's based on our beliefs of what was there, based on the research that we could find. Now, part of me hopes that somebody comes forward and has an actual map of it so I can verify that. And the other part of me is going, well, geez, did I make a mistake? And if I did, I did. But it is a concept of where things laid at. And the park itself, the actual amusement park area, was not that big. The whole property, the entire property, was 52 acres. But the part where the lake is 4 acres. And then the most of the rides and the buildings were contained on the west side of the lake, except for the roller coaster, which went south quite a ways. But I'm going to say most of the rides were contained in a 3 or 4 or 5 acre area at the most, and perhaps not even that large.
What do you hope that the reader takes away from this book?
Well, first of all, I hope they enjoy it. I hope they find it interesting and informative. I hope they learn something about a part of Marion's past that, as you mentioned, a lot of people remember bits of but don't really know much about, and that this will pique their interest, maybe want, help them want to learn more about other areas in Marion. At the Historical Society, we talk about how many books and resources have been written on Marion's history. I would be safe in saying that there are at least 25 or 30 different books that have been written on various aspects of Marion throughout the years. And all of those together put a picture of what this county, what this city has been like from the time it was founded in 1820 up through today. And this was one part of that. It's a part that is well known but forgotten at the same time. A lot of people have heard of it but don't know much about it.
On that note, what do you think in putting the book together? Because a lot of people do know the name, and they have memories of certain things. What is the biggest misconception people have about Crystal Lake that hopefully this book will clear up?
I think think it was in operation as an amusement park longer than it was. Those that even knew it was an amusement park, I think they may be surprised to know that it really was only full-fledged amusement park for 4 to 5 years, depending on when you say it ended. There was no record of when most of the rides were actually taken down, but we have some photos of the early 1930s, and they were not there then. And then the other thing is the misconceptions that people have. I have a gentleman that mentioned, that I think maybe I mentioned before, that swore the roller coaster was still there in the late 1960s. Well, it wasn't. It's interesting, I mentioned to you before we went on the air that I had the opportunity to meet three gentlemen, or talk with three gentlemen, who actually lived in the roller skating rink at Crystal Lake for 5 years in the early 1950s. Their father managed the rink, and they lived in the back of the rink. And so they were able to tell me in detail what was still there. And at that time, the 1950s, there was virtually nothing there. There was a couple buildings still standing, a couple concession stands still standing, maybe a few bases of some of the rides, the concrete bases. But as far as there still being remnants of the roller coaster or remnants of the carousel or things like that, that was long gone. The area where the roller coaster was a weed field, a hay field, or a weed field. The one gentleman talked about going rabbit hunting with his BB gun there where the roller coaster once have stood. So I think the fact that that except for the dance pavilion, roller skating rink, if you will, and the swimming lake, that most of the rest of it came and went in less than 10 years.
Where did this all start? Where did the idea come from? Was it somebody's mind's eye? Was it a group of people?
Well, there was a group of people that formed the Crystal Lake Park Company. There were five or six Marion businessmen. They went together. Now, where they got the idea, I would just have to surmise that they got it because they were seeing other amusement parks around the area. Within, say, a 50-mile area of Marion, there were five or six other amusement parks. Right up the road between Bucyrus and Galleon, there was Sakeum Park, which was a big amusement park. If you go over to Indian Lake, if you go down to Columbus, Fremont had an amusement park. Findlay had an amusement park. Mansfield had Luna Park. So within a 40 or 50-mile radius, there were already several amusement parks there. Many of them were built as part of the interurban, the light rail network. Crystal Lake was not built as part of the interurban, but the interurban did go right by it. The interurban ran up Route 4, which is literally right across the street, right across the road from where Crystal Lake was. So my guess is it was a business venture. They saw an opportunity to make some money. You know, they weren't shy. Again, they put in $2.5 million the very first year, in today's dollars, $2.5 million the very first year they opened it. And then the next year, they put in another $1 million. And so within 2 years, they had invested today's dollars, over $3.5 million, in developing that lake. So they weren't, in that park, they weren't shy about putting their money where their mouth was, so to speak. And they obviously wanted it to be a success.
In your research and in your opinion, was there anything that could have saved it? The Depression came and it wiped a lot of people out. Is there anything that could have prevented that?
I wouldn't know what it would have been, other than if you had a Daddy Warbucks that just had pockets that were so deep that he could have kept everything going and not care if it made any money or not. I have no definitive record of who owned what, but reading between the lines and doing the research, a lot of the rides I don't believe were actually owned by the Crystal Lake Park Company. I believe they were sublet, if you will, or a person would come in and build the ride and run it then for the proceeds. One of the first stories was about the merry-go-round, the carousel. The first year it was installed, the park management sued the company that put it in because they didn't think it was up to standards. It was not a jumping machine. All the rides, all the horses or animals were stationary. They didn't jump up and down. And so it actually ended up going to court, and the court ordered that the owners of the ride could leave it as it was for 1925. Then in 1926, they had to come back and redo it and put in jumping animals. So I think the only thing that could have saved it is if perhaps there had just been a very wealthy person who could have kept it going and not cared about having income.
I do want to remind people again, the book is Crystal Lake Park. It will be on sale tonight, Tri-River, 7 p.m. at the book drop party tonight. No charge to get into that, of course, a charge for the book. But there will be a presentation tonight, author Randy Winland. What can people expect tonight who show up for the party?
Well, I hope they expect to have a nice time. I'm going to be presenting a PowerPoint show, a video show of different parts of the book. One of the challenges has been trying to pare down what I want to show because there's so much I want to share and trying to knock that down to a manageable time limit. The other thing I'm excited about is I'm going to have three people there that are experts, if you will, that people can ask questions of. Mike Perry is going to be there, and he's going to be talking about Marion photography and his collection, or I shouldn't say talk about, but he'll be able to answer questions and visit people. Mike Brewer will be there with information about Marion's quarrying history, and Bob Turner will be there to tell people how to use newspapers.com and do newspapers research. And I think it's going to be an enjoyable evening. People can converse. They can have a chance to sit back. I'll be glad to answer questions when the presentation is over. I'm not going to answer them as part of the presentation because that could take forever and ever. But I'll stick around as long as anybody wants to and talk about it once the presentation is over.
And again, what is the cost of the book? And if people can't make it out tonight, how can they get a copy?
Well, the cost of the book is $25.99, but tonight we'll be selling it. We have to charge tax, so we'll be selling it for $27 tonight. So they can come to the event tonight. They also can stop by Heritage Hall, which is the Marion County Historical Society. It will also be available starting tomorrow at the Carroll Jewelers. They are a partner with us, very graciously helped us sell it. Andrew's Pastries, the Books on Center, and the Marion Convention and Visitors Bureau. They also can purchase it online at our off our website, which is www.marionhistory.com. And again, all the proceeds from the book do go to the Marion County Historical Society.
With about 2 minutes left to go, Randy, when you have announced that you're doing this, when you have put it on Facebook, when you have went to these partnering businesses and said this is what the book's about, what is the response from people?
Yay.
Yeah.
They're excited about it. There's a Facebook group that has a huge following in Marion that has had post upon post upon post about Crystal Lake over the last 5, 6, 7 years, whatever it may have been. And the response from people there, finally we're going to be able to learn more about it. And so it's been very pleasing. It's humbling that there are people out there that want to learn about this. I've enjoyed doing it. I have spent a tremendous amount of time doing it, but it's been something I enjoy doing. And it's something that's going to now preserve the history of that lake forever.
How long did it take you?
I would have no idea in total hours. I am not exaggerating when I say thousands of hours over the last year and a half, 2 years. Just putting all the research together, finding all the, and documenting it and putting it into a sequential order. The book is written sequentially, year by year by year by year, and then there's sometimes we group years together. But putting all that information together and then deciding what format do I want to use and what pictures do I want to use. And then also, I think I mentioned I self-published it, so all the layout and design. Other books I've written, I've used commercial publishers, and I would give them the information and the pictures, and they would lay it out, and they would format the pictures and change them and upgrade them. I did all that myself, and then used a local publishing company out of Mount Gilead to actually print the book. So all that together, it was a labor of love, but I can safely say it's been thousands of hours.
Well, Randy, I got into this last night, and I've always had an interest in this, not being alive when it was around, and it's so great to be able to go year by year and see the history of this part of Marion history that I don't think really has been told until now. It just lives in a title, and now it doesn't. It lives in a book, and that's a great thing that you've done for the community of Marion.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Do want to mention again, tonight, Tri River, 7 p.m., no charge to get in. Randy Woodland will be there, and the book will go on sale tonight, and that's a great thing. And then a whole lot of other places where you can get the book in Marion Historical Society and online as well. Mayor Jack Kellogg in about 15 minutes. Stay tuned. We're going to stop at 10 years. We're going to go on into the next years. What do you make of his opponent?
You're trying to get me in trouble. You're baiting me.
No. We can move around that question. We can move around that. You have always been that nice to me. And, boy, I'll never be able to...